Mike Tyson said this. This is a quote. There's too many prison cells, jails, lawsuits, bankruptcies, women, venereal diseases, too many everything. I got tired of every time a prostitute girlfriend came back from a trip, I had to sleep with them. And that's why Mike Tyson is a vegan today. All right, we got a call here. WFMU, you're on the air. Thanks for your patience.
Hi, Bronwyn.
Hi, who's this?
Hello.
Hello, who's this?
Hello.
Hello? I know you can hear me. Everybody else could.
I'm going to call.
Okay. Well, can't hear you. Sorry. Let's see. Well, we're almost out of time here on Sportsy Talk. We've covered a lot of things. We've covered the Olympics, the Ravolympics, Douche of the Week, the Sanduskies, soccer, football, Mike Tyson, that's boxing. Oh, yeah, I wanted to say condolences to the Gamecocks of South Carolina on their loss in the College World Series. They lost to Arizona. Gamecock supporters are saying, well, we knew they'd lose to Arizona. But they were two-time champions. They were the champions last year and the year before, the Gamecocks were. So they had a good chance. But sorry. They didn't make it. Okay. Should I wrap this up? I might as well. Oh, yeah, one other thing. We have a Supreme Court decision. It has nothing to do with sports. But the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously agreed on last Thursday, that if the FCC is going to sanction a broadcast network for violating indecency rules, it has to be clear about what the rules are. And that's the thing that we've had here as a radio station, which WFMU is, among other things. It is a radio station still. We broadcast. We've had our problems with people, you know, saying the bad word. We've got the dump button. I have to be careful. Sometimes I have to, like, bleep myself. And it's really hard to know what you can and can't say on the air, because you know you're not supposed to say things. But like that, everybody says, oh, the seven dirty words. That's not true. George Carlin made that up, but nobody actually knows what you're allowed to say or not say. The FCC has never come out and said, these are the words you cannot say, or these are the things you cannot do. But if you do something and they decide it's too naughty, then your whole station's in trouble and you have to pay enormous fines and bad things happen. So it's been very difficult. But now the Supreme Court, 8-0, said that, and that's unanimous, said that FCC fines that were brought against Fox Network for fleeting expletives that were said by Cher and Nicole Richie on two live award shows are, you know, illegal. Yep, because the FCC never said what you can't say. So I guess we can say any goddamn thing now. Huzzah! But I've been so beaten into submission over the years, I probably won't. But I thought that was good news anyway. So anyway, it's getting on towards 7 p.m. And I guess it's time to say that this has been Sportsy Talk on WFMU East Orange, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, and on the web, WFMU.org. And thanks to everybody who called. Thanks to everybody who's been commented on the comments board. I'm glad you could find the comments board. I guess that was a difficulty last week, but this week everybody seemed to get right there. Thank you. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks to the toxoplasmosis in my brain that keeps me coming back to do radio. Thanks to Chris T. for letting me fill in for him these last 2 weeks. And Chris, we'll see you next Tuesday here on Aerial View. But for now, this is Bronwyn C. saying, thanks for inviting me into your home tonight. And may God bless.
To Miracle Nutrition with Hardy Y. I'm Hardy Y. Join me now, won't you, as we talk about spiritual matters, matters of health, cancer, and we just have a good time. Having some fellowship like old folks sitting around a table at a diner all day long, but instead of complaining about politics, I want you to take a look at this thing on my back. Tell me whether you think it's dangerous. It is. It's a pygmy chimp, and it's probably going to bite your finger off. There is nothing to fear but fear. There is nothing to smell but smells. There is nothing song to sing that can't be sung. There's nothing you can do but to learn how to play the flute. I don't know who said that, but I don't think it's completely accurate. Now, tell you why. There's other things to fear, such as flying cockroaches coming right at you, or anything tiny, really. Now, there's tiny, and there's scary tiny, isn't there? Anything that can kind of crawl up your leg, like some kind of mouse soldier, crawling up your leg towards your privates, that's frightening. And you know when that happens, it's either him or me. One of us is going to die. So we're going to talk about that today, talk about the little things headed for your genitals, figuratively. And I want to speak about fear, and also I want to speak about Pompeii. I've just come from a museum exhibit about Pompeii, so now I know all about it, and I just want to share this information. You probably know about it. You've probably seen these people covered with ash. Now, they're not people covered with ash like my grandparents who smoked cigarettes in the car with the windows rolled up. Oh, and I had to breathe all that. I remember feeling, oh, I'm so sick, but I really need a Benson and Hedges. I was explaining to a young person about that, how cars, see that little coin holder there? That used to be an ashtray. And see that little thing where you plug your iPad in? That was a cigarette lighter. And see that box there in the dash? That was where you kept your heroin works. And this strap is what you beat your child with. And we have evolved a little since then, I think. But still, we have a long way to go. And that's why I want to discuss this Pompeii tragedy and fear and people, what they do when they're confronted with it. Now, Pompeii, as you know, was a city in Italy. It was a very wealthy seaside city. It's like Boca Raton, but with fewer Italian people, because it was very metropolitan. There's people from all over the world there, trading and doing things. but it was right at the foot of a volcano. Now, I have learned from, what is a volcano? I've learned this from science class. A volcano is a mountain, and sometimes it erupts. And what will happen is that the underground vinegar will mix with the underground baking soda and David Tennant. And then it will shoot out, and all sorts of rocks and smegma on ash come out the top that are supposed to be on the inside. It's eruption. And that just, that fell on the people of Pompeii, all that ash. And they became so ashy that no amount of Jergens skin lotion could help. And they were buried in it. And the city disappeared for hundreds of years. And nobody knew it was there. And they started digging. And they finally found it. And they said, look at all these beautiful riches. And the king of Naples says, I'm going to steal all that. Awesome. And it took a lot of that. But hundreds of years later, they started digging some more. And they found little recesses in there where people had died and their bones had crumbled, but it kept a perfect outline of what they did in their last moments. They're reaching out. So now they have these plaster casts of these Pompeii people in their last moments. What were they doing? What were they like? A lot of them just crawling on the ground. It's so sad. It just tore my heart out. All twisted up, holding one another in those last moments. So one thing I just want to put out there for future generations, let's make an agreement right now. Should a lot of ash fall on us, let's make sure we stand up, elbows down, jazz hands. Would I be happy? Then when people find us in 1,000 years, they go, oh, it's not so depressing. Unless it looked like, but that could have been misinterpreted. So, oh, it's Han Solo frozen in that chromodomium. So I don't know, maybe something a little, you could do the I'm a little teapot pose, anything like that to give joy to future generations, I think would be helpful, because it was so depressing to me. And I learned a little bit more about the people of Pompeii. And they were a little bit different than us, but not very. They, first of all, they are very into sex. And they weren't ashamed of it. And it was everywhere. They'd have all kinds of on their paintings and everything. On their walls, they have what we would think of as porno now. They just have it on their walls. People in all sorts of sex positions and everything. Fountains with things that we can only illustrate on bathroom walls now. And they illustrated on bathroom walls. They did graffiti. So they're very modern. And their graffiti would read, you know, Septimus came here to defecate. And it smells like Reyes Gallus. You know him. So they had the same kind of sensibilities as we do. And yet they were buried in ash. And this is why when you look at it, your heart just, I know what that's like. To just be minding my own business, making garum, which is like, what is that? That is an ancient Roman sauce. And someone said to me, it's like Roman ketchup. They put it on everything. Oh, well, what's in it? And they said, well, it's salted, fermented fish guts. Now, how is that like ketchup? I'm sorry, I beg to differ. That is not like ketchup. Ketchup is like a tasty, sweet, tomato-y thing. Salted fish guts, not so much. So I don't know. Maybe they were very different in that way, but also very alike. Because like I said, you know, they would poop, they would have sex, they would eat, they would wear ornate jewelry and have household gods. Now, we don't do that a lot, but other things is just too close. There was a very rich empress that had a house there, I understand. Her name was Poppaea. I believe she was one of Nero's mistresses. And we remember her in history because Poppaea actually invented the pocket fisherman, which is a very, very old invention. We don't think that, but a lot of those old inventions go back to like Heron of Alexandria, who invented the rhinestone and stud setter. We think that we've done everything now, that modern people have the copyright on all that. It's not true. So she had a beauty. She enjoyed a good orgy. So she had a very big swimming pool, and that swimming pool's still there. They've excavated that giant, like a bunch of Olympic-sized swimming pools, and I suppose they'd have their, what they call in ancient Rome, bungus, I believe, because you got to put the U.S. on the end of it to make it Latin, because I can now speak Latin now that I know that trick. You just put a U.S. or an A.E. on the end of things, and that Latinizes them. Swimming pool have these orgies in there, and I thought, wow, that would be sort of horrifying for the fella who shows up and just wants to use the lap lane. Can't I just, I'm just an elderly man, and I want to swim my little, like Mr. Rogers or something, just want to swim a couple laps, and I never put my head under the water, and I wear the little glasses, and y'all over there having an orgy. Oh my goodness. Decadent adult swim should just be in at a certain time. Then they poured chlorine. There's not enough muriatic acid and chlorine in the world, really, to take care of that for me. I'm no prude. It's just that, my goodness, somebody was explaining to me at the exhibit, well, Romans just didn't have the hang-ups we did. Saw the human body and sex is beautiful. Well, that's good. I kind of do. But it's also, to me, a little bit repulsive. I like it done, you know, I don't like to think about other people having it necessarily, because the human body is not completely beautiful. You know, it's sometimes it's ugly, and it smells like garum in those moments. So I don't, it isn't something that's interesting to me. I don't begrudge it to others. Bless your heart. You do what you want. Be kind to one another. But I really, in the privacy of your own giant palatial orgy pool, I really have no say. That's up to you. Bless your heart. I can only give you little tips about how to run your lives. I can't tell you what to do. I can just say fear is the enemy. Now, why is that? Because it leads to anger. And we're all afraid inside. People are afraid to admit it. Everybody's so tough. Say, Hardy, why are you always saying bless your heart and love you? It makes you look weak. People think cynical is funny. I'm not cynical. If there's one thing I'm not cynical. You know what cynical is? It's a popsicle made of sin. It's like shoving Satan's frozen tongue down your throat. And excluding a very hot day, that's unpleasant. I'm gonna be optimistic. I'm gonna say we can do this. People are good. Look at that. Look at them good people. I don't know where to find them exactly, but I'm looking around. Maybe we can make people into them. I enjoyed my trip to Cincinnati is where I saw this exhibit. A couple things I'd just like to point out that I didn't like. One is I went to some place, have ribs, and they started to put a bib on me. I said, excuse me. The last bib I wore didn't say lobster on it. It said mommy's little man. And so I don't really, since then I haven't really worn any. And I have gotten very good at not splashing sauce all over myself. So please don't put that toilet seat cover around my neck. I don't need it. And it made me look around at my fellow humans there. This were eating and food was flying. And I'm thinking, oh, all this excess. It's very Roman. It got me in the mood for it. So that's interesting. Went down to also caught the Juneteenth festival there, down at Eden Park in Cincinnati. Enjoyed that. Learned some things. Learned some things about Abraham Lincoln. A lot of people don't know this. Abraham Lincoln never said, "I'll wrestle you for it." That's from a National Guard ad. I don't think he ever really said that, and didn't speak that way anyway. He spoke like this. "I'll wrestle you for it." That is recorded in history. You think I'm making that up? But people want Lincoln to speak like this. But he didn't. If you really read your history books and people describe his speech, he spoke like this. Government is all... When is it? I'll recreate the Cooper Union speech. Government's all side-goggling now. Some Jasper done come up to the house. Made it all side-goggling. Now, I don't know if he spoke exactly like that. Bless his heart. I'll tell you what. How many presidents have we had with Marfan syndrome who are on the penny. Not many. And he is on the penny. What else is he on? He's on the, no, he's not on the one. That's Menachem Schneerson, blessed memory. He's on the five. So I don't have any significance in that. But I love learning history like that. Some people don't, but I do. I do. My mind is open. Stuff's coming in, coming out of it all the time. I ought to put at least a screen on it. That's what I'm thinking, screening it in. Because otherwise, I don't know what gets in there.
Raised up in Louisville, a city all know well. Raised up by honest parents, the truth to you I'll tell. Raised up by honest parents, raised most tenderly, till I became a burglar at the age of 23. My character was taken and I was sent to jail. My people found it all in vain to get me out on bail. The juries found me guilty, the clerk he wrote it down. The judge passed the sentence and sent me to Frankfort Town. On an eastbound train one cold December day, and as I passed the station I could hear those people say, yonder goes a burglar, for some bad crime I know, for some bad crime or other to Frankfort Town must go. I saw my aged father a pleading at the bar, I saw my dear old mother a dragging at her hair, dragging at those old gray locks, the tears are streaming down. She says, my son, what have you done to be sent to Frankfort Town? I have a girl in Louisville, a girl that I love well. If ever I get my liberty, long life with her I'll dwell. If ever I get my liberty, bad company I will shun. With playing cards and gambling, I'm also drinking rum. Pray keep it while you can. Don't walk about the streets at night or break the laws of man. For if you do, you surely will. You'll find yourself like me, serving out your 21 years in the state penitentiary.
Burglars are a scary thing. I came home from vacation not too long ago, and I found somebody come in my house. They'd been there going around, turning lights on and off, and even though it was the pet sitter and I had hired her to do that, it was still sort of disconcerting. Knowing somebody was in there. It did happen to my car. My car got burgled, and I can't figure this out. So they get into my car, and they take my cell phone, which I don't even like, and yet they leave all of my Mitchell and Webb CDs. I can't even figure out people. I try, though. I try to put myself in their place. What are they afraid of? The same things I fear. Having people judge you, look at you. A lot of people hear my accent. Think I'm, well, you're some kind of hick or something. That's what they think. Hey, I speak this way because I've modeled it after the people that I admire. That's how we get our accents. We're not born having an accent. You see people you like and you kind of model it after them. And that's the way you speak. Just like you're not just born in Bermuda and start saying, go down the road, darling, like that. You learn to do it. Now, I do see things like other people see them. And I know that you're afraid of people looking at your appearance being judged. Oh, I know it because I'm a homely person. I'm not attractive. I know that.
So I feel bad. People look at me, judge me, saying, look at that ugly, homely man. But they do tell me, say, hey, you look, your eyes, you look like Billy Bob Thornton in the eyes. Well, actually, only one eye, and the other eye looks like Gian Gomeshi. See, that's ironic, and that gives me a special balance. I think I'm able to see what other people see. When I was in second grade, first day of second grade, I was in a new school. I was so afraid. I'm a shy person. I was shy then. I'm shy now. People terrify me. And because I thought, well, again, I'm not the smartest book in the Bible. Or what, I don't even see. So I was in the second grade, and I was terrified. I didn't want to go to the bathroom because all these big boys in the bathroom. I said they beat me up or something. So I held it all day until the last hour. And then I peed myself. And then the kids were taunting me. So you peed yourself. You peed yourself. And second grade's kind of old to pee yourself. Oh, and I was crying. I said, no, these big boys put me in the fountain. I lied. Which is an impossibility. I can't even say they picked me up and put me in the water fountain, just wet my crotch. That's unlikely. So I had to go ride the bus home like this with wet pants and nobody sitting next to me. And sometimes I just want to reach out and hug my 7-8-year-old self, but I can't because I'm covered in urine. So even I don't want to hug me. But I'll tell you what, I got home and my granny was there. And my granny, she cleaned me up, and she put powder on me, and she gave me some hot cocoa. And she wasn't impressed. She made it all better. She didn't even flinch. She didn't even yell at me. Just cleaned me up like that. Showed me that compassion. I can't believe it. I'm going to be like that. I'll be like that. When I see a child with wet pants, I grab them, I say, I'm going to wash you, put powder on you. No, don't do that. Please don't do that. It's something different. It turns out I was right about the bathroom. Later in second grade, when I finally did go into the bathroom, there's a fellow in there sometimes named Melvin. He'd go, come see what I did in the toilet. I said, no, I don't want to, Melvin. Oh, we all have to one time or another forced to look and see what Melvin put in the toilet. I don't want to do that. Bless him. Don't know what possessed him. But my grandma, Granny L, she's amazing. She cleaned up everything, afraid of nothing. She cleaned up miscarriages and vomit and all that. And when she lay there dying and I kissed her face for the last time, I thought, you've given something precious to me. You showed me that love outweighs fear. Oh, Sissy in the Barn. I think they mean Sissy like Mrs. Beasley, Buffy, Jody, Sissy. Not Joe Besser, Sissy. But I don't know what they mean. It does when I hear that word Sissy, though. Oh, it takes me back because I wasn't a popular kid in school. And I'll tell you why. Because I was the second slowest, fattest kid. Now, that's not too bad, because there's always a slowest, fattest kid, Miller. So when we'd go out to P.E., the game was kill Miller. He'd start running, and we'd wait, and then we'd all chase after him and pile on him, and I suppose try to kill him. But I didn't want to kill him. I didn't want him dead, because if he was dead, then I'd take his place. And I didn't want that. And so I would join in with the torment. This poor soul. Simply because I didn't want to be him. I'd rather people kick down and kiss up, don't they? Because they don't want to be ostracized. What's ostracized mean? Turned to bone? Osteosporosis? No. It means to be rejected. To be shunned. Like Miller. Just because, only because this kid was fat and slow and occasionally dressed like a Nazi. See? It's not that easy to have compassion for people, is it? Not everything's like a movie. It's a little more complicated than that. We have to look past some things, help change people, open our minds a little bit. Not easy to love. People can be very, 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 very unlovable. But we're all afraid of being rejected. I'd like to quote Rush. Oh, I know what you're saying. Saying, Hard, I thought I liked you. Now here you are quoting Rush. Hey, it's the radio. And when you think radio, I think Rush. I'm sorry. So I just want to tell you this, and this quote is pertinent. And it's this. Conform or be cast out. That's what Rush says. They also say, catch the spit, which I don't think is nearly as profound. But it is. We're afraid. We have to conform and go along with what other people want. Go along with the crowd because we're so afraid that we won't be loved or accepted if we don't. So this poor Miller, reacting with anger against it. You can't blame it. Fear turns to anger. Except when you're huddled in Pompeii and the ashes descending upon you and your hour nears and you're holding the person next to you and you're all touching one another and you know you're doomed. But let me give you a tip. That just made me think of something after seeing this Pompeii exhibit and all those remains and all. I got a tip for you. Take care of your teeth. Clean your teeth. And I'll tell you why. Because should your lips be seared off of your screaming skull, your teeth become very prominent. And they look actually whiter against your skull than they do your skin. But still, get back there, scrub a little, get them sweet tea stains on there. There's no sense of being posthumously mortified. If that's not a contradiction right there. Oh, bless you, I'm trying to help you clean up your bones. I wish that I could have my skull tattooed. Not my skin, I mean, under the skin, right onto the skull. So if that my skull was stolen from my grave, people would flip it over and they'd see a message. And it would say something like, property of Père Lachaise Cemetery, drop in the nearest mailbox, postage guaranteed. So, hey, this belongs to somebody. Because I don't want some blessed goth kid putting a skull on, a candle on my skull. Actually, I do. I do. I changed my mind. If I can be a skull lantern for you when I die, that's beautiful, friend. Go ahead and put me next to your book of necromonkeys. Necromonkeys. What is it? I don't even know. Bless y'all. Religions are good to me, except ones that hurt one another, which a lot of them do, so I have to think about that. But use my bones. Come on, use them. Take them. Use them as some kind of macabre Lincoln logs and build something out of them. Take what's dead and bring it up again. Oh, we're gonna live together even though we're scared. You know what scares me? Haunted houses. Mainly the sad lives of the people who run them. More than just, I'm not so scared of Herman Munster and all. Bless his heart. I'm a little scared of his bourgeois values. We don't see things alike, one another. Even those of us who have had our heads bolted on. You don't know what people have been through. That's what you can't just look at somebody and tell whether they're suffering or not. So you have to be gentle. If we were gentle with one another, it'd be better. I don't know where we got this idea that everybody's got to be a tough guy. You're not a tough guy. I thought I was a tough guy. I went to take some fight classes, and the first time I got nicked in the boys, I didn't feel so tough. That'll take it out of you. Nothing like a little pain lay you low. So that's why I say, keep your eyes open and watch out for one another, because it's just better that way. You know, then you don't run folks over. That's why they have a camera. Get a camera in the back of you. Right there, so you can see where you're going, just like a van has. Make sure you're not backing up an elderly person. Oh, I'm sorry. They walk by my sidewalk. So I'm backing out in the morning. You never know. I wonder whatever happened to Miller. Oh, yeah, I remember. He was getting promoted in the CIA just about the time that I was losing my job at the grocery store. See, it's bad being the second to last fat kid. Because you should have been standing up for your own. That's almost worse. So I was afraid and I was disloyal. I was afraid to stand up and say, hey, this isn't right. Because I was afraid of getting beat up. And there's things worse than pain, isn't there? There's shame. As I say, don't shame anybody. If you have to praise somebody, prepare for 5 minutes and talk for an hour. If you got to criticize them, be careful. Prepare for an hour and talk for 5 minutes. That's an old proverb, and I think it's right. Be careful with people, because they're feeling what you're feeling. They overreact. You don't want to make them into a monster, unless you're making a monster. Again, with the Herman Munster example. Bless him. And then you want it to cobble together the best of everything. I'm going to get the best big meaty hands for this one. Only the finest graves will I rob. And then I'm going to redo. Then I got to constantly tinker with him. It's like my old Nova. I couldn't really afford to do any major overhaul. So I thought, I'm going to get a new steering wheel cover. Or I'm going to make it smell differently now. Like pine. Like a different kind of pine. I'm going with, actually, cedar I'm going to go with this time. And then I'm going to get one of those beaded seats you sit on. Oh, isn't that nice? It feels like I'm sitting on marbles. How comfortable. I never got one of those. I didn't understand that. I had the sheep one. So you come out smelling like an old man's hair gel. I think I'm going to lanolin or something. But the beaded ones. And it feels like you're getting a massage. No, it doesn't. It feels like somebody just hit me in the back with buckshot or something. That's not very relaxing. And I want you, you know those massagers that looks like there's a Pompeii sex toy? See, we still run into that. People's desires are embarrassing, aren't they? In Pompeii, they have all these, you see, genitals on the walls and everything. They're obsessed with that, just like we are today, just like we are today. Somebody in China dug something up and they thought it was a fancy mushroom and it was a sex toy. Isn't that nasty? They've named it like fleshlitis fungus or something. Like, nope, not real. Made of latex. Probably in your country, which is also repulsive. Can you imagine that if you're a poor person in a third world country and you're making sex toys for first world people? And you're thinking, oh, I'm going to make this the best orgy ever. I'm going to make sure I get all this flashing off of it so nobody gets cut. I can't imagine what they must be thinking. Say, I can't eat, but I'm making a fake dong. What are they doing on the other side? What people probably thought that about Pompeii. Say, man, I can't even afford garum. And here they are pouring it on themselves and giggling naked. As I said, don't use food. That's a pet peeve. Bless your heart. Don't use food for sex. Really. And when you do, think about somebody starving watching you do that. And thinking, man, I could have used that hothouse cucumber in a salad. Look at you. I'm not condemning you. Oh, I wouldn't do that. How's that going to help? I just want you to think about these things, what you're doing, before you do them. That's all. Hey, Hardy, I don't want to be preached to. I'm not preaching to you. Look, I'm a million times dumber than you. I want you to be able to see me and say, hey, that moron makes me feel better about myself. Maybe I'll listen to him a little bit because I don't feel threatened. Can't be threatened by me. I'm not your better. I'm nothing. I'm just some poor fool who's reaching out near death saying, I love one another. Come on, we can do it. It'll make it better. Just a walk. It'll make a walk to the store better. So we're not suspicious of one another. I was the only white person at that Juneteenth festival besides the fella selling snow cones. And I don't know, it could have been a couple reasons. One, it was a celebration honoring the sacrifice and the struggle of Americans of African descent who had to fight and die for their freedom when handed to them. Tremendous sacrifice. And so they were out there celebrating that and understanding their history. And I want to be out there too to share that. It's my history too. And so I wanted to be there together. But I don't, who knows who wants you to be there, who doesn't. I don't care. Because everybody's different. You can't generalize about that. I learned that long ago. You try, but you can't. The only thing I can generalize about black people and white people is this. And this is going to be controversial, y'all. I'm sorry. But I've noticed this. And that is that mainly, not exclusively, black people play whist and white people play bridge. And I don't understand that. So I'm going to go get my Gorans out and see, because I think it's a subtle difference. Do they even know that? I see a time where we're all sitting at the same table and we're all eating some kind of spicy snack. And you whip out a deck of cards and it doesn't look familiar because it's Uno. And I laugh and I say, look, I'm not from the Midwest and you're going to kill me. I need something a little more complicated. So we play Russian roulette Uno, and if you got to take four card, you kill the person next to you. Don't do that. Doesn't have to be high stakes. We can all sorts of games we can play together. We don't have to have this division. To come together, see somebody just walk up and just take them, take their hand, grab them on the street, grab their arm. Unless they're blind, and that really upsets people, don't do that. Because I've made that mistake. Say, I don't help you. Let go. I can't see you. What are you, hurting me? I'm sorry. I'm ignorant. There is nothing I have learned worthwhile that I hadn't corresponded with an embarrassing situation. I love that. That's how you learn. Do something stupid. Say, what are you? I was at a restaurant in France. And I ordered a cheese plate. And it was very dark. And I saw this one hunk of cheese, and I said, oh, that looks good. And I picked it up, and I put the whole thing in my mouth. I said, it was about 3 tablespoons worth of cheese. But it wasn't cheese. It was butter. And then I had to pretend that that's how I ate butter. Oh, I eat butter like that. Oh, it was repulsive. But I was so embarrassed. That happens to me frequently overseas. I do everything wrong. Toilets, all kinds of, if your toilet is any different than my toilet, forgive me. I'm so sorry. I'm not used to there being like multiple toilets for different things. I'm pretty clear on a urinal now, but other than that, oh, and ancient toilets where you can sit together with somebody. Some of them would sit next to each other and talk. Now I've had people talk across the stalls to me. Nothing nasty. Just sort of, if you're in school or something, you're, how you doing over there? Good. I don't really want to chat much. But people used to. They'll say, let's go have a poo together. Really? That's Roman, is it? When in Rome, when in Pompeii, do as the Pompeians do, and that is be covered with hot ash. And be frozen like that in time, along with your pig and your dog. I said, dude, they huddle together. Even the animals, they have them frozen in time. There's a dog somebody left chained up outside their house because they thought they were coming back. Guard everything, Fidus. Oh, you're kidding me. Because the dog knows the ground's shaking, fool. Come on, let me out of here. Guard our garum and our gold and our little figurines, our little precious figurines that people have in bottom sex and all. Okay, really, is that worth it? How much longer would the dog have lived anyway? Does it matter how long you live? If you were a little baby yet to be born, if this could happen, and someone said, okay, you're going to be able to live, but you're only going to live till you're about 12 or 13, would you come down to Earth and do it? Or would you say, no, thank you, I'll skip it? Is any life worth it? How much life is long enough to live? 10 years? 100 years? I've known people who are 100. I lived next door to a lady who was 100. And I said, how are you? And she says, well, I really stopped planning for my future at around 80. So I'm pretty much in trouble. Yeah, okay. You don't know what to say to somebody like that, but it's true. You can live too long. I just keep living. And all my friends are gone. That's the other thing, too. You live long enough. The oldest lady in Kentucky, I believe, is 113. And they say the way that you live long is you get over things. You don't grieve as long. She had lost her cabin, had burned down with her baby when she was in her 20s. And she had to get over that and keep going. Because I think it's loss and grief sometimes that wears you down, too. But these people that make it 113, how do they do it? And do you want to live that long? Oh, the things that you could see. It's amazing. Say, just the other day, it seemed like I was at Marcel Duchamp's armory show. And now here I am looking at Pit Christ. So, big difference in that. Friends, when I reach out to you, I can't get my hands past this wall in front of me. But my voice is going out over these magical airwaves, flying out there like Harry Potter on his broom. Brooms haven't changed a lot in all those years, have they? I would definitely be flying on a Swiffer. Just because it seems a little more sanitary, because I can change the end of it like that. It's just me. I have a thing for dirty things. I don't mind them. I live in absolutely abject filth. I'm lying to you. I don't. And also, sometimes I don't smell very elaborate. I smell like a person. I smell like a person who works with animals. And yet I don't. A lot of people mistake this. Hey, you work in a barn? I go, no, I do not. Why would you say that? But you get like my pee-pee-soaked bus trip. You know, I'm alone a lot. And that gives me time to contemplate and to think about things. And I used that time when I was at the exhibit and I was visiting with those bodies. And I was saying, hey, look at you. I know that you're just human beings. And you can see little children's skulls are smaller. And then there was a little alien star child skull. Oh my goodness, there are aliens. I don't care about that. Care about aliens. Can't care about one another. Star child. What about real children? That's what I hope. My hope is coming out my pores. Like grease. It's like whatever I ate. Like that falafel. Said you had falafel, didn't you? Yes, I did. It's coming out my pores. People say, you just read something inspirational, didn't you? And I say, yes. And you say, well, I can tell because it's pungent. Thank you. That's what I want to do for you. No pipe or cigar smoking on the patio. Things can be too pungent, can't they? I don't know why they say that. A pipe of cigar smoking seems like you do a little less of it. They always ban that specifically. Cigarettes, I can understand. But a pipe? Huh. That smells like candy and makes you look sophisticated. I do occasionally smoke a pipe, and I know that's not good for you because potentially I could get oral cancer, jaw cancer, and that's horrifying to me. But I'm so taken by pictures of Tolkien. I think it's can't, and I know he's dead, but I don't know what killed him. I mean, it could have been a dwarf. Not a little person. I mean, the axe-wielding, mountain-living kind. I do not know. I don't know a lot about history. And I do a little bit of reading, mainly in the bathroom, to be honest. But I want to educate myself, and I want to learn more. And that's why I like to be around people, because they'll let you know sometimes if you're ignorant, They'll volunteer that information to you. And I think, thank you. Especially in traffic. They'll point that out to you. Symbolic, with symbols, hand gestures and all. Thank you for pointing that out. Another fear that a lot of people have is a fear of rejection. Fear of being rejected. Now, I am a writer. I haven't written anything, really, but I'm lonely. And I think that's what I have in common with other writers. But I have some heroes. I want to be your writer. You know what I'm saying? I have a lot of heroes. Heavy set men of letters I admire and I want to be like. George R.R. Martin or Bruce Vilanch. But I can't. I keep getting rejected. I'll send my stuff out, and I'll get a letter back. The worst thing you want to see is a letter that begins, "At first, we were taken with your work before we realized that it was not that of a child." And they're disgusted that you're an adult male, especially by your illustrations. But that's what Timmy and Jill's little clubhouse would have looked like. I just wanted to make a children's book about a little pair of children that befriend a mouse and then they go home. And I know it wasn't very interesting. I didn't have any ideas. I just wanted to capture that innocence, you know. But we're all lonely and it's not innocent. You know, we want to hook up with somebody, be with someone, sometimes resort to going to bars. I've done that. Try to use these pickup lines. I thought it was so clever. Young lady comes up, I say, "Hey, I think I detect some theremin." What is that? Sex odors. And then she's gone. I meant pheromones. I always think of it afterwards. That happens a lot. None of my pickup lines ever work. "Hey, young lady,
I'm at this bar every single day in this same spot, and I haven't seen you before. That didn't work so well. One time I said, hey, you got looking for a sugar daddy? Well, I'm not sugar daddy because I have reactive hypoglycemia, but I will be your artificial, what is that artificial one? And she's gone by now. And I see her out in the parking lot and I yell, aspartame, daddy! And it's too late. They wandered off already. You know what it's like to be rejected. I've had a girlfriend leave me. She said, I love you, but I don't love you like romantic. And I love you like you're an old shoe. You're like an old, comfortable old shoe. I said, oh, I get it. It's because it smells like cheese. Not in a good way. Wouldn't be bad to smell like cheese. Some cheese smells good, but if it was on a person, it's so funny. I love to go, that's a beautiful aroma of camembert. Oh, it's coming from an individual. Then it's scary. But if you were going to smell like any food, oh, I got a question. If you could smell like any restaurant in a mall food court, what would it be? I want to be that cinnamon place. I think that'd be nice to smell like that and not like sort of Asian food that's been sitting there a while. Oh, it's comforting because those, what do I smell like? I haven't even smelled myself. I'm going to smell my arm. It smells like hair before it's burnt. I think that's because I'm used to my hair on my arm being burnt because sometimes I still use the lighter fluid on them. The last one, it doesn't use one of them chimneys on my charcoal grill. And I like to make a big mushroom cloud come up and it usually burns me and everything. I do dangerous things like that because I'm foolish. One time I got my face stuck in plaster. I'd seen these death masks. That is the first clue that folks were dead. You see these death masks of Lincoln or Voltaire or something, and gosh darn it, they're already dead when they had the stuff put on their face. Besides, you don't put the plaster right on your face, I learned. Here's why. So I had a beard, big long beard, and I'll make a plaster, a face of myself. How about that? Like art. I'm going to be like Man Ray. So I had a friend. I said, I'm going to put straws up my nose. And I stuck some straws up my nose. And I said, pour the plaster all over my face now. So I did put Vaseline on. I thought that'll keep it from getting in the hair. Well, what happened is the plaster's kind of liquidy. And it went in between every single hair of my eyebrows, every single hair of my eyelashes, my mustache, all the hairs of my beard, and it dried. And so, it wouldn't come off. And then we all had a good laugh. And then everybody started to panic a little bit. And rightly so. Rightly so. It was a panicky situation. Couldn't get it off. So finally, I sort of ripped one piece away near my eye. And I had one eye coming out. Like I was Phantom of the Opera or something, looking around, I couldn't really talk. That was really scary. And on my eyebrow, my eyelashes are all ripped out. I'd ripped them out at the root to get this thing off. But the rest of it was still really stuck on because my beard was completely encased in plaster. And I thought, well, maybe a shower will loosen it up. So I got in the shower with hot water, and then the water started going down in the mask. And just kind of started giving me the effect I was drowning. And so I just told everything I knew, which is nothing. Then a friend went and got some razor blades, straight razor blades at the grocery store. And I took the razor blade and I just started scraping between the plaster and my skin, trying to shave and breaking it off in little pieces. And sometimes the skin would come with it and the hair. And finally I had whittled all the plaster off my face, and it was all cut to shreds, and my beard was gone, and the only thing I could salvage was this one little piece, plaster cast of my eye with my whole eyebrow in it, and I saved that for a long time, just as sort of a badge saying, hey, Hardy, you are the biggest idiot that God has ever made, and why you are still alive and not trapped in a coffin or something somewhere is just amazing. Why aren't you playing Dungeons and Dragons in a stormwater conduit?
right? Why are you alive? I don't know. I just keep getting lucky. I think it's because I have friends. And bless, it's good to have people around. That makes you feel a little better. Everybody needs a friend. So you reach out, just right now, wherever you are, and say, hey, will you be my friend? And I have a feeling the reaction you're going to get. So if at first you are rejected, just keep trying. Bless your heart, because everybody is in the same boat. We're all in a little lifeboat piloted by a secret Nazi named Billy who's got some chocolate that he's not sharing. Yes, yes, you might be that Tallulah Bankhead. But see, because we're all in that boat, our fate is together. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen to all of us and that picture of Alfred Hitchcock. But it's better to be there in person, isn't it, Tuck? And what if the boat is sinking? Do we bail it out even though the water's coming in? I say keep bailing. Don't give up. Keep bailing. So you're going to die, but you'll die an hour later. Life's like that anyway. You're going to die. I'm sorry. My neighbor did that. Come up to me. Talking about my neighbor said she's going to die because she's too cheap to get a heart operation. And he was right. And she did die because she's too cheap to get a heart operation. Is that you? Do you have 4 rental houses that are befilfed with cat feces? That he also told me that. So he gave me the person's whole... People give me their life stories and the life stories of everybody in the know, and I sort of just nod and say, oh my word, this is like Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner my whole life. You're putting an albatross on me and telling me this story. I am the perpetual wedding guest. I don't mind it because I like to connect with others. I think we are so much alike, and then I speak to people. Man, I don't know where you come from, because that is not my life experience. But hey, if you don't speak to people like that, then you don't realize how complex and how interesting the world is, unless you hear different voices. If you're always hearing voices that are familiar to you, you will never learn anything. If you don't overcome your prejudices and say, hey, that person that speaks differently as a differently spoken person, they may have something to say to me. If they're from Ohio, or they're from New York, or California, or Burkina Faso, or one of them places, you don't know Aruba, Bahamas, Mama, all those places. I'm not going to make fun of anybody's country. It's all beautiful. Except for that one. What is that one place that I've been that I didn't like? Is near France. I don't remember what it's called. But generally, everybody's good. Except people blow things up. Bless your heart. Let's get them early. Get them before they blow things up. That's a thing when they're little children. Say, hey, little child. I love you, little child. There, stranger, little child. Got to be a better way than that. Maybe it's a better way of showing your affection. Like I say, I don't always do it right. I'm clumsy. I'm all thumbs and big toes. Everything, my whole hand. My whole one hand is a big toe. And I know that's disconcerting people. I say, well, I was born this way with a big toe hand. I'm sorry. But it's interesting, isn't it? You can't stop staring at my big toe hand. That's when I have people... with a deformity or something. Oh, look at him. And we're not necessarily being mean. We're just saying, I've never seen a person like that with 2 heads. One of which is Rosie Greer. Again, you know how I feel about him. If you are differently abled or something like that and people stare at you, you figure that out, that it's not all bad. They're not always staring because they're mean. Sometimes they're staring because they're just curious. They've never seen anybody like you. So you got to represent. And you got to say, yes, ma'am. I have a supernumerary nipple. And I don't. I have a friend who does. And I think that's pretty special. And I love, sometimes I think that's lucky. It doesn't work or anything. It's just supernumerary. It means extra. So extra, good to have an extra nipple. Because you don't know where you're going to be, especially you travel. Rick Steves says things like that all the time. Take your ass, you're going to Germany, take an extra nipple, because you don't know what's going to be going on over there. It's a different place. Oh, I'm so lucky that you're with me. I feel less lonely. I feel less fearful knowing I have friends I haven't met. And yeah, we can say we're friends. That's not insincere. Because cynical people saying, you don't even know these people. Yeah, I'd rather them be my friend before I know. I don't need to make any enemies. Enemies are easy to make. But friends are precious. And that's what gets you through life. And that's what buoys you. It buoys you like them swim things that make children wear. Oh, thank you for joining me. I want you to come back again. Join me again. And again and again. We'll do this all the time. And then maybe, through a nutrition miracle, you and Hardy White are going to wipe out loneliness in our lifetime. Bless you.
This tune my dad used to do way back down to 1800s, and they called it Granny Willie Dog Bite, No Child No. And this is tuned, this is what they call cross tuning.
WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, WFMU.org. Stay tuned for the Antique Phonograph Music Program with Mac.
Oh, Hey, everybody. How y'all doing tonight? It's your host, Mac. Here I am. Of the Antique Phonograph Music Program. Back with you. With another hour of more records. We started off tonight with Earl Fuller's Rector Novelty Orchestra. A very jazzy number. In the very year that jazz was starting to be recorded. So, within a couple months of what is said to be one of the first jazz records by the original Dixieland Jazz Band, here's Earl Fuller's famous jazz band, who I like so much more, with their tune Little Eyes of Jane. Yeah, the Victor label from 1917. Starting off this hour, bringing you a variety of records tonight. All sorts of stuff. And going to do now a few standards. Songs that you might, I don't think you'll know, or maybe you might know them. They were definitely recorded quite a bit back in the day, 100 years or so ago. This one is by the popular duet of Albert Campbell and Henry Burr. It's a court record, which is sold by the court sales company. I think they have their own stores. I should go look where they are. They say 330 6th Avenue in New York. Go by there one day and see what's there. But yeah, not much information available about this store. It's a two-sided record. But this is the song, The Trail of the Lonesome Pine. Actually, a very nice sounding surface on that record. It's This record is particularly thick. Particularly thick shellac. A nice looking label. I don't think I have... I think maybe I have one other Court record. Yeah, they're not very...